Hello. Whoa. Hello. That's wonderful. I like the sound of my voice, so it works perfectly for me. Hopefully, it works for you too. Hi, my name is Corey Sanders, Group Program Manager for the Azure team. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what's new for Azure in Infrastructure as a Service. And I'm accompanied by Drew, who's going to be introducing himself.
Hi guys, I'm Drew McDaniel. I work for Corey in the Azure team, lead program manager working on the infrastructure service. In fact, I think Corey and Mark Rusinovich are probably the two folks that have been on infrastructure service a little bit longer than I have. But we've been doing this since it was new in Azure, and really happy to talk to you about what we've got new for this round of Tech Ed.
Yeah, should be fun. We got a jam-packed filled session for you, so I'm excited to get going, and we'll move along relatively quickly with a bunch of demos to try and show you how things work. Before I get started, just like a quick survey, who here has used or is familiar with Azure's Infrastructure as a Service? Wow, beautiful.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Who here has seen or is familiar with my show on Facebook? Okay, one.
Yeah, there you go. That's about
That's it? Okay, well,
I think I've seen
that's
it
right. All right,
once
that's it.
for
That's it.
review
I have a
time,
show on
right?
Facebook. It's terrible. That's why one person's seen it. Let's move on. We'll get going here. The key thing here that we're going to talk about is I'm going to start off with just a little bit of the overall strategy and how infrastructure service works into the overall platform. So you heard Brad talk a little bit this morning about mobile first, cloud first, and how they're effectively the same thing. How could you have two things first? That's fair and accurate. But from my perspective, if they're both the same, then we might as well put them in the right order. And so we'll be talking today about cloud first only, and the mobile first is obviously other sessions. So why cloud? It's kind of an obvious thing. The biggest question that we've got left for you today is less around why, and much more around when and how. And so the key thing here, with cloud, the agility, the automation, the pay-per-use, global reach, a lot of the features we're going to talk to you about today really try and emphasize some of those characteristics and some of that capability. We'll focus a lot on DevOps, but we'll also focus a lot on being able to manage this like you do on-premises. Time to market capabilities, automation, et cetera. There's a lot of this that we're going to be improving today with some announcements that we've got. And hopefully the when and how is immediate and using Azure. So just to kind of give you a view of sort of what this looks like, when I look at the Azure platform, there's a lot of pieces that come together. We're going to be focusing almost entirely on infrastructure as a service today, but I just like to paint an overall picture. We do have a wide range of services available. Infrastructure as a service, both Windows and Linux support, and storage and networking as well, and we'll cover a lot of topics on those. But platform as a service with a lot of development languages, web, mobile, data analytics, media. A lot of things here that you can go build your application and be able to deploy your application in Azure with sort of the ease of management that you'd expect and the agility that the cloud offers. And so wide range of solutions, PowerShell will be mostly the things that we show you today with a lot of Portal. But we do obviously have Node.js tooling as well for cross-platform management. And you can also use Eclipse and Visual Studio, and we will show a little bit of that today. Okay. So when we look at sort of Azure and the value that it offers, and Brad mentioned this a little bit today, there's sort of three big areas that we really are excited about. One is the hyperscale, one is enterprise grade, and one is hybrid. And we feel like we're actually uniquely able to offer the combination of these three, right? A lot of other cloud providers would boast, one or the other, or maybe even two of these, but we feel like we're uniquely positioned to offer all three with passion around all three. And we'll structure the entire talk around deliverables and features and scenarios in each one of these three areas. So just to start off with the hyperscale aspect, huge numbers here, 25 trillion storage objects, 300 million AD users, the 13 billion authentications per week, which is crazy, and 2.5 million requests per second against storage, which is just astronomical numbers across 16 regions in 2014. So we'll have the full set by the end of 2014 across these 16 regions. Some of them are in preview and some of them aren't released yet, but all 16 this year. And so that will give us actually the most regions of any public cloud provider. Great. With the hyperscale point, we always like to mention Titanfall. I'm going to do another survey. Who's tired of hearing about Titanfall on Azure? Okay. Slide, next slide. Who's tired of hearing about NBC on Azure? Okay. yeah, okay. So I'm not going to cover these. The two main things for these is really just they're the best examples that we have right now about just this massive amount of compute capacity and regional solutions that we've got. It's sort of the point. It's really supposed to point, drive home, wow, you know, if you could do these sorts of things, what could you be doing with the cloud? Okay. So let me focus on the more interesting stuff. So enterprise grade. The two big things with enterprise grade that we really spend a lot of time on and have a lot of announcements on today, corporate assurance and manageability. When we look at corporate assurance, there's a few things. Security and ecosystem. So you heard about the anti-malware announcement this morning across both infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. We have a Microsoft anti-malware solution that you can deploy by default. But we also have some great partnership solutions. And we'll talk about this later, but solutions with Trend Micro and Symantec as well to be able to inject their solution on first boot directly into the virtual machines straight from the portal. And of course, the power and simplicity of that will actually explain how that technology works underneath and talk a little bit of the direction we're going with that in the future. Trustworthy compliance, I'm not going to read the list. It's an exciting list. I'm sure you all love compliance. I love compliance, but we do have a great, great long list. The one interesting one is actually we recently received Article 29. It's an EU data privacy compliance, and we believe we're the only cloud provider that's actually received that. And so that's an exciting one. They're all exciting, of course. Okay, moving on. Enterprise class support. This is something that just, you know, we sort of take for granted at Microsoft across the entire stack, whether it's SharePoint, whether it's SQL, whether it's Windows, whether it's Azure. We offer the high level of support and high level of enablement for you to be able to deploy what you want to and work in the way you expect. We'll also be talking about some partner support today. We have one announcement around partner support involving Linux that we'll be announcing later today. Disaster recovery, you saw this. I won't spend too much time on this. There's a lot of coverage on site recovery, but it's a big part of our corporate assurance solution. And then, of course, Cloud DR and HA. This was not announced this morning, but we will be demoing and announcing the ability to have virtual network span between two regions in Azure to allow you to do, hey! That's the first clap, not about my show. That. Okay, no, just kidding. This will be exciting, and we'll demo it with SQL later today. So I ruined your demo.
Oh, no.
Sorry. Okay. Okay, and then manageability. With this, we'll spend quite a bit of time today talking about DevOps, and we recently announced both support for Chef, Puppet, but we'll also show a lot of deeper support for PowerShell that we're recently announcing. And, of course, we have the new portal experience, which doesn't yet have infrastructure as a service, but, of course, this portal experience is really all about this simplified resource management and is the future experience of our platform, and so you'll see a lot more of that come to life, actually, as it moves on through its preview. We'll mention a little bit about Visual Studio and, of course, a little bit about System Center. And the last area that we'll cover is right about hybrid. And, you know, when we look at hybrid, we really think of this as sort of a full experience, right? This isn't just about a pipe going into the cloud. It's really about the full application experience, which is why we'll talk a little bit about Azure Files and how that's going to help you build applications that can run in both places. And we'll also talk a little bit about identity and infrastructure as well. Infrastructure, of course, you heard the announcement. We reached general availability with ExpressRoute, and so we have a large amount of telco providers that are actually live with us today, including AT&T, Verizon, BT, Equinix, and Level 3. We also have a storage solution offered by Zadara, and there's a bunch of other sessions throughout the conference that cover the details of this ExpressRoute solution. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on identity today. But, of course, the identity solution and hybrid nature of this allows you to do a replication of user accounts from on-prem to cloud and allows you to manage them in the cloud. And so it allows a really easy revocation of accounts and allows you to have that same experience across both with your Azure Active Directory solution. And so, again, I'm not going to really spend too much time on this today, but it is always something worth talking about for hybrid. And then data, the two things we'll talk about. Azure Files, we've got a demo of this later. And import-export actually reached general availability. And this is the ability to ship a disk that's encrypted straight into Azure and be able to take that data right into a blob account. And that did reach general availability today, was also announced. Or I just announced it. It's generally available. Okay. and then, of course, application. You know, this is really where we feel strong and really thrive, right? There's not necessarily anything to announce specific to these areas, but the coordination and collaboration that we have with the SQL team in sort of being able to build their backup solution in the cloud, the always-on solution using the VNet to VNet capability that we'll show, and being able to just manage your data in sort of a seamless way on-prem and cloud is really an exciting part of the platform, and it's something that we'll continue to build on over time. Same thing with SharePoint. And so one of the things you'll also see later today is the ability to actually have an internal load balancer, and SharePoint would be a great scenario for something like that. Oracle, recently we just GA'd the images for Oracle, so that was a couple months ago, so we have a bunch of images available for Oracle deployments, you know, Oracle DB, all the solutions that you may want, we can deploy directly from an image, and it's actually pay for use in Azure, and so that is generally available as well. And of course, BizTalk Server, also images available. Okay. With that's kind of the intro and sort of setting the stage. I wanted to, for a little bit more of the detail, I wanted to hand it off to Drew to take us down a little bit of the rabbit hole.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Corey. So as Corey mentioned, we're going to go into more detail, especially around our enterprise grade for infrastructure service and the hybrid solutions for infrastructure as a service. Kind of the way we're going to look at this, we're going to walk through the development and DevOps solutions around infrastructure service management and using System Center, then digging into security, the ecosystem around security, and our DR and networking. So how many of you are using MSDN subscriptions, how many are using those in Azure? Most, good. So we're getting a lot more numbers on that now, a lot more people making use of that. So if you have an MSDN subscription, you are eligible for free dollars of Azure on an ongoing basis that you can use, depending on the subscription, $50, $100, or $150 of Azure benefits to use each month. You can use those on different things, but specifically if you use them on infrastructure as a service, you get a discounted price. You basically pay just for the compute usage, and so if you're running Windows, you're running SQL Server, you pay for the price as if it was just a Linux machine, the base compute. In addition to that, we've introduced at Build, Corey announced, our basic VMs. Now, what the basic VMs are is it gives you the VM, but without the capability to do load balancing or autoscale. You can bring your own load balancing, bring your own autoscaling, but with that trade-off, you get a much lower price on each VM. So, for example, if you are running using an MSDN account, a basic VM, you're looking at $91 for running that 8x5 for an entire year. If you were instead using the full-price VM, the standard VM, you're looking at a little over $150. And so you can get a really nice price at using this basic VM to use it for dev test. For the basic VM, and we'll look at it, you can use the different ranges of machines that we have of VMs, and they all have a corresponding discount. Now, I'm happy to announce one of the solutions that customers have been asking for some time when using Azure for dev test is using the client operating system. Up until this point in time, client operating system was not officially supported in Windows Azure. People were doing some of it, but now with MSDN subscription, we've got images, we've got full support of using Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1 directly in Azure through these MSDN subscriptions. Great, thank you. So let's flip over and show a little bit of this.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
That was my job.
All right, so what I'm going to show here, flip over. Now, first off, and we're using Chrome here because we can show a couple different subscriptions. In Windows Azure, there's the standard subscriptions that you're going to have with an EA agreement or a credit card pay-as-you-go. And then there's these separate set of subscriptions that we call our MSDN benefit subscriptions. And so what I've got here is I'm logged in, and I've got one subscription that is my MSDN subscription and another subscription that I'm connected to here, which is my standard subscription. This is a standard Azure subscription. Now, if I flip over and I'm using the standard subscription.
Uh-oh.
Let's try this again.
Oh,
as we said, using the wireless was working up until this point in time.
Try it again.
There we go.
Just hit F5.
All All right, so now we're going to look at this. If we're using our standard subscription,
make sure we're flipping.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So one of the cool things about the MSDN offer is that, like Drew said, there's actually a discounted price for running Windows. It actually is the same price as running Linux. But also all of the application solutions like SQL, BizTalk, those are also a discounted price in the MSDN offer. And so it allows you to do a lot of interesting development and testing using the Microsoft solutions like SQL, like BizTalk, in that account for that reduced price.
Great. Thanks, Corey.
Yeah.
All right. So if we're looking at this, dancing on the stage. All right. Okay. So in a standard subscription, this is what you're going to see when you normally log in. You've got your SharePoint, your SQL. One of the things I'll call out here that's new, Puppet Labs, is a solution that's available as part of our automation. But you don't have the client OS. You don't see any of that here. If we were to switch over to the MSDN subscription, apply this over here. Now as we log in, we're going to see some additional images available. So now if I go to that same location in the gallery, and a couple things pop up. Under here in Visual Studio, Dynamics. So if we click over here, now we actually see the Visual Studio images. We've got Visual Studio installed on Server 2012 for doing some server-based testing. You also have Visual Studio now on 8.1, and then also Win 7 and Win 8 images just ready to use. So you can use these images within the MSDN subscription in Azure, deploy those, use them up there. We also have things like Dynamics, a couple from the GP and the NAV group. And if you're looking in here and you want to just look at MSDN images, by filtering here, you'll notice that we've now filtered down to only these images that are unique to MSDN. The other images, as Corey mentioned, are available. So you can run SQL Server here. Unclick this. And you can still use SQL Server, and you're going to pay the lower price, just the compute offering. Now, when you click through on one of these guys, you also now have your standard, and this is what we've had before on the sizes, but here's where you have your basic VM. And the basic VM gets you down through our A4 or our extra large sizes. When you use this basic VM, you're not allowed to use the load balancer. But it does save you that save you some money on that, so you pay a lower amount per day to run. All right. And I'll turn it back to you. All right. Sorry, we'll continue.
You're up.
So what can you do with your MSDN? So now we're looking at if you have a $100 MSDN credit, you could run, this is what you could do before build, 3 VMs for 16 hours a day. But now with Basic, you can actually run those 3 VMs for 24 hours a day. Down here at the bottom, you could have done an 80 VM load session. Now you can actually run at 100 VMs for a 20-hour load session. This is using the basic VM size with the MSDN premium credits, which is $100 per day. Now, we've talked about, and Corey mentioned a little bit about infrastructure service and our platform as a service. This is the VM extensions, something we introduced at the Build conference. We're going to be talking about it more here and how we're actually leveraging the VM extensions to extend the VM. This is going to make it easier to do some of the management of your VM, bring on some additional software into your VM. But the key point here is, one, you still have full control. It's still a proper VM. You can log into it. You can change it. You can configure it as you want. And you're also getting that support through a set of partners. So we're extending the Azure ecosystem. So in a large extent, this is how we start getting IaaS and having IaaS come together with our platform as a service, giving you some of the benefits you have in platform as a service in the infrastructure as a service VM. And so what we're showing here is your VM that's running in Azure. You've specified when you deployed the VM, I want to do something with PowerShell. Within the backend of Azure, we have these configuration packages that are supplied by Windows Server PowerShell team, the Chef team, Symantec, and other third parties that supply these extensions. And when they're specified, the VM will go and grab those extensions, pull them onto the machine, and make it a super VM, if you
will. That's right. Disco VM.
Disco VM. It'll dance for you a little bit. Now, what you can do with this, and we'll kind of break these down, there's a set of basic helper functions that we are have introduced ourselves. So when you start a VM now in Azure, in the portal since about April, or through PowerShell, if you download the new PowerShell, you always get this BG info, which is a set of information on the desktop to give you some more information about the VM and where it's being deployed. VM access we'll look at, but VM access is what allows you to either reset the network, reset the administrator account, reset the password. Because one of the most common things we've actually had from our, we hear in our support team is, hey, I forgot my password. I put it in that portal and I have no idea what it is anymore. And so using these extensions allow you to go in and reset the password of the machine, reset the administrator account, and get to access back to your machine. Virtual Machine Manager, the System Center Virtual Machine Manager, is a set of solutions that are based on the solution provided in the on-prem SCVMM product that allows you to configure a VM role, to configure the box using these templates that are built for System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and you can use those directly in Azure. And then the RDMA drivers we'll get to in just a moment on how those are used and what those are used for. Now, when you're coming from the helpers, the next area is kind of our automation configuration. And so we've got really three main pieces that we're looking at here today. Puppet Labs is a partnership that we introduced at Build where you can launch through the portal, select that you want the Puppet Labs extension installed, and it will then prompt you for the Puppet Master server. If you have your Puppet Master server deployed, the machine will connect up to that and then take the commands from the Puppet Master server. Similarly, with Chef, you can specify your configuration that you want for your Chef client, give it its identity file at the Chef right in the portal. Take that, spin up the VM, and it'll connect to the Chef server. And then finally, with PowerShell, you can specify a PowerShell script to be run at the completion of the VM setup in PowerShell as local system. And so this allows you to do a lot more automation just directly through Azure as compared to trying to orchestrate it externally. The Visual Studio team looked at these extensions and said, hey, we're really betting big on IaaS. They've continued to develop solutions to get more integrated with Visual Studio. But two things they've done is they've hooked up Web Deploy and the remote debugging capabilities. So now when you deploy a VM through Visual Studio, an IaaS VM through Visual Studio, it automatically puts Web Deploy on there. And so Visual Studio can reach back into that machine and easily install a web application directly to that machine very, very quick. Of course, show us a little bit about how that's done. And the remote debugging is also where they use that to quickly install the debugging tools onto that remote machine, again, using this extension interface, all direct driven by the Visual Studio console so that you can connect into that machine and do remote debugging very easily. So let's just dig in and look a little bit what we have on these machines. Okay, so first start off with doing a little bit of PowerShell. Big fan of the PowerShell and all the power that you have with the solutions around PowerShell. So we're just going to kick off a Windows machine here.
And this PowerShell integration is all new as of today, right?
We've had some PowerShell integration before through remote management,
right.
But now you actually, it's all fully integrated into the portal, into the PowerShell tools to launch. So that makes it very easy to kick these off. Now, what I had done here is, I really don't want the password to be saved and maintained, and I know there's this new VM access solution. So what I'm going to do is leverage this little script that I wrote. So I've got a script that I put together for creating a random password. So what we're doing here, we're just going to generate a random number, pin that to my password, and then set the username that I use for my administrator to this password, the randomized password. And so I'm not going to have it. It's going to be set on the machine. And then only users that have permissions to the Azure account can go in and reset the password and log into that and get that machine. So to do this, all I need to do is select on the custom script. I can browse my local drive. I've got my demo for reset password, random password. I plop that in there. And then as that machine goes and completes its deployment, it'll run that script after it's set up. And reset the password on that machine. Now, we looked at a little bit of the different scripts we have, so I want to go and kind of just show you a little bit in the fullness we have here. So from PowerShell is where you can get the full listing of these scripts. And so we've got a command for get Azure VM available extensions, and we're going to put this out to the grid view. And if we run this, this is going to go against Azure, download all of the different extensions that have been registered in the system, bring those up, and as you see, we have all of the ones that we were mentioning today, Symantec and Trend, but some additional scripts that are allowed, the BG Info. And for each of those, there is the schema. So this is the default public configuration that you can use to configure it. And then there's a private schema as well. And the private schema is things like passwords and things like that that you really don't want exposed to everybody. Now, we also have mechanisms like, for example, the VM access. I don't really want to deal with this detailed schema, configuring an XML file. So instead, some of these we have. And so we have a set Azure VM access extension. And this is the extension that allows you to reset the password on the machine. I'm going to go ahead and show this machine's still starting up, but I've got another machine that I had a password that needed to be reset on here. So using the simple script, I'm going to get the name of the machine. Make sure I've got the right name. I think I renamed this guy. So the name of the VM is Druem Random, and the same, the service is also Druem Random. So we just set that here. We're going to execute this to get the VM object. We're going to reset the password to a nice 123 password that I can remember. And then finally, you send it back into Azure with the update Azure VM command to kick this off. And now that's going to go. It's going to run that extension, log on to Azure, send that down to the machine. And once that's completed, then I'll be able to log in with this password and this admin username. All right. So we'll let that complete. Flip back over here. Next one I want to show is log into this client here. So continuing on the extension route, log into the client. And here we're going to show, this is the BG Info. So what BG Info does is it reaches into Azure and finds some information about the VM, a deployment ID that you might use for a support call, both the internal IP address, the public IP address, and this is a space where we're continuing to add more information about the VM that you can just get directly here at a glance to see what's going on with that VM. So with that, I'm actually going to hand over to Corey, and he's going to take us through some of the stuff that we're doing with Visual Studio.
Yeah. Thanks, Drew. That's awesome. I'm just going to show you really quickly some of the integration with Visual Studio. Again, playing on that extension solution that Drew was talking about, just really powerful stuff. Here what I've got, what they've ended up building is a deep integration with Visual Studio and managing across virtual machines and all the other solutions, platform as a service solutions as well. So I've got a website that I built, and it's called Build IaaS, and I actually just simply want to go publish this. So I have a few options when I publish this through Visual Studio, and I can go back here and you can see a few of my options. Websites is one of them, but I'm going to actually use a virtual machine that I've already got. And I've got a virtual machine up and running that I had deployed earlier and web deploy launched inside of it, so I'll just validate that connection. Looking good. I'll go ahead and go through. I'm going to make it debug mode, and I'll go ahead and publish. And so that should be a pretty quick publish, but then I realized forgot to actually give it the right about screen. So I click over here and all it says is about. Well, that's stupid. Let me go back and republish here. And so with that web deploy built right in, it's amazingly simple and fast to go ahead and spin up that virtual machine, have the extension dropped in by Visual Studio, and be able to use it incredibly fast. I can even go in and debug this remotely. And so let me actually just hop over and show that in a moment here. If I really wanted to, I can attach a debugger, and this also is using the extension solution. So this is actually Visual Studio talking into an extension that they wrote inside the virtual machine. And look, you can see I've got all the processors inside here running. There's the one actually that's got that's running IIS, and I can connect to it and actually set the breakpoint on that same screen. And so let me actually go ahead and move over back to the web page and go to the About page, and you can see it ends up popping me back here, and the breakpoint's been hit. So great, that's all the sort of the Visual Studio integration. They have a lot more coming, but they're using the extension model to its fullest.
Awesome. Thanks, right. Corey.
Yeah,
of course. Very powerful.
Yeah.
So now continuing on the automation management, with PowerShell, they've introduced a new solution called the desired state configuration. Now, this is a very powerful thing, especially with virtual machines, where you want to specify the configuration in the desired state. So you have just a template, what you want enabled, what you want not enabled, and it goes and drives the machine to that desired state and will continue to drive that to its desired state. In addition, we've introduced for the PowerShell team, OneGet, which is a package manager for PowerShell that allows you to download applications from the Chocolaty community repository, so you can very quickly get applications and tools on your machine immediately. Now, these things work really well in Azure. Those tools you can also use on-premise, and it actually kind of gets not only enterprise-grade, but kind of towards the hybrid model where you do the same thing on-premise as you do in Azure, and it just works. You can do dev in one place, production in another, or however you want, but the same tooling. So what we're going to walk through is a demo. Now we're going to, using the desired state configuration, we're going to log into specify a DSC script. This is going to set up the IIS, turning that on. It's going to make sure that .NET 4 is installed, and then it's going to download the configuration for this website. Now it pushes this into Azure Blob, a bootstrapper that leverages the custom script. That configuration is then going to be brought down by the bootstrapper. So the VM is going to grab the bootstrapper. It's going to download that. The bootstrapper script is going to get the configuration, pull that to the VM. Come on. And then it's going to read the configuration script, parse out what is needed, go out to the resource gallery, and download the commands, and then execute that configuration. So let's go and look at what this is going to look like. All right, so what I've got here is just the basic demo script. So we're going to kick this off. It uses PowerShell to start the machines, build a configuration, provisioning script. Here we're using this custom script extension to leverage the bootstrapper and the config, and then we tell it to launch the bootstrapper. And then finally, because we're building out a website, then it sets up the HTTP endpoint for the website. And so if we're going to look at this, let's flip over here. What we're going to do, I'm going to kick off the demo. And it's going to go through and it starts uploading all the configuration, all of the files that we need into Azure Blob Store. So if we look at this over in the Azure Blob Store, I've pushed up the configuration and the set of system modules that the system that's going to need.
And this is a Cloud Explorer, a third-party tool?
Yes, Cloud Explorer is a third-party tool. You can also use the Windows Azure portal to look through this as well.
Got it.
Cloud Explorer gives you some tooling that you don't have there. So we're going to head now that it's been uploaded, we're going to let this continue. Now it's going to go through and execute and create the virtual machines. And as those virtual machines come up, let's see, let's flip over here. So now it's executing the PowerShell. Let's go over and we've got a new cloud service will be created here. Do a refresh. So this is going to come up. This fourth coffee is the website that is being set up. In that, there is going to be the VM instances. And these are being driven directly by that script. When that script completes, it's going to configure using DSC the website. Thanks to DSC, if the website is changed or modified, it will continue to make sure that is consistent in the kind of the make it so aspect of desired state machine. So we'll come back to this in a minute, but for now, I'm going to continue back over to the slides.
Oh, sure.
Hand over to Corey.
Mm-hmm. Wrong direction. Yeah, so the one thing, you know, and as Drew sort of showed, the ability to have that PowerShell script solution to be able to install and deploy things. Now, the one thing that you sort of want to put that together with is the ability to sort of capture either running or shut down virtual machines and be able to maybe deploy them multiple times. And so what we've recently announced is the ability to do sort of this VM capture concept. Now, previously, it always required you to sys prep the box before you could do it. And that is still the recommended way to do with Windows, is if you are going to make clones of virtual machines, it is recommended that you do capture, that you do run sys prep. But we've actually enabled both through PowerShell and through the portal the ability to capture running VMs and VMs that are shut down but not yet sys-prepped for your use in redeploying. And so what that ends up meaning is the old version, the OS images, now you can actually capture them whether they're sys-prepped or not. The other aspect that we've added is it captures the disks attached as well. So if you have a virtual machine with, let's say, two disks attached, maybe a SQL server with data and log attached, or maybe a Linux server with a bunch of data disks attached, it actually captures the whole thing, and deploying it will now replicate the whole thing. And so with the solutions that Drew mentioned, you now can automate a whole bunch of things with capturing this, automatically deploying PowerShell on deployment, and being able to sort of drive your entire deployment that direction without ever having to log onto the box. And so here you can go ahead and capture this box, and then it's you can start replicating it as many times as you want, lots and lots and lots of times, all over the place. If you happen to like Linux, this would be a perfect scenario for you. And so it allows you to deploy sort of the March of the Penguins for Morgan. Morgan Freeman would be happy. That Morgan Freeman, March of the Penguins, anyone seen that movie? No. Okay. We'll move on then. It's like overdue for me. It's like Settlers of Catan would have been a better joke. Okay. Let me move on here. Okay. That's over. Back to you,
Drew.
So
we'll flip over. So to show the images, here's – I've got a machine set up. Now, what I've done here is – which is pretty typical. You're going to set up a – oops, sorry. Let me flip over to the VM. So I've got a machine set up that I've added a set of data disks to. And so we've got an OS disk, and we've got five data disks. Now, this is fairly typical. Our data drives can go up to 1 terabyte in size. So either for larger space, you tend to span the drives, or for performance reasons. If you span them together, you get a higher performance. Typically, and the easiest thing for people to use is storage spaces. So I've got the machine set up. Let me just go over here. And so I've got the machine set up with those five drives configured as one volume in storage spaces. So I've striped the three drives together to create one larger volume here. Now, typically, this you would set up only after the fact. So you deploy the VM, you would have to add the images, add the drives there, go in, connect into the VM, do some configuration. And it was kind of a painful process. And in fact, if you're using SQL, it's one of the challenges you have right now. The SQL is in the image gallery only has the OS disk. And so there's a lot of post configuration that you have to do. Here, you can set it all up in advance. I'm going to go ahead and so this E drive is the drive on using spaces. Now, I do want to point out, it's always worth mentioning, the D drive, explicitly called out here, is temporary storage. That's not backed by Windows Azure Storage. That is local on the machine running the virtual machine, the physical machine running that. And it is not, it is ephemeral. It is not persistent. And so you want to be very careful what you put on the D drive. The VMs use it for putting their page file, but it's not where you'd want to put your database. You probably don't want to put your Active Directory information there because it will be lost and will not be maintained. And so if we have this file, I've actually copied up here Corey's demo from Build, where he was making some other poor jokes with Jeffrey on at Build. And so
that's not cool.
The Settlers of Catan. I didn't even get that, you know, afterwards. But so this thing is up here. You could put whatever data here. You could put your SQL Server information, your databases. So that's all up here in on this VM. Now, before, if you wanted to capture that, you had to run sysprep, shut it down. The process of sysprep effectively destroys the VM, which is, you know, a reasonable thing to do. But, you know, customers are asking, hey, we want something a little easier. We want to take a quick snapshot. We want to be able to not go through that crazy sysprep and deploy the long deployment times. And so now, if you click into capture in the portal, before it would have said, you're running, the machine's running, you can't do anything. Here it's like, hey, the machine's running. There is a warning. Hey, we might lose some data if things are in the middle of being written to disks or whatever. But if you want to do a quick capture, you can do that at your own risk. And so we're going to take a little risk here. And so we got a capture running. And when we kick that off, it's going to go in the back end. It takes snapshots of the storage blobs and then makes a copy of those in that same location. And the great thing is while that's occurring, the machine here is still running. And so there's no impact on the machine that's running, do whatever it's doing. So you can take those snapshots as you want. And if you want, you can kick those off and redeploy. So the other, but now, if you actually want to capture it in a sysprep way, in a really way to deploy multiple machines back out, you still can do that. So here we're going to go through and we're going to run sysprep. We're going to at least start it off. So you can still do your sysprep. You want to generalize it and have it shut down afterwards. And this is going to do, this is the kind of normal operation of sysprepping the machine. When it shuts down, then we can do that full capture. And so this gives us both options. When we go into the portal, now, if I click over into my images, as that registers, this was from a bit earlier. And in fact, this is something that was really useful as setting up the demos. You have it just all set up and ready to go. But you can select the machine and just go through the normal process, and that will deploy that machine out again as a duplicate copy, and you can get the March of the Penguins. All right.
Should I go back?
Yeah.
All right.
Good. Now, the VM images makes it easier to manage the machine. Another thing that really helps in managing machines is System Center. So System Center, many of you, we're talking to several folks here, are using System Center on-premise. It's very nice to continue to use System Center also to manage your machines in Azure. Thanks to the Express Route, it is even easier to manage your machines in Azure because now you actually have a dedicated, with using Express Route, you have dedicated bandwidth, much lower latency, and so Azure even becomes even more like just a remote data center in the cloud that you can just manage like you would any kind of a branch office. And so here we're showing you can use System Center Operations Manager to manage those machines in Azure exactly as you would on-premise. If you choose, you can also run System Center Operations Manager inside Azure if you're doing a cloud-only type environment or for dev test. Another great solution with System Center is the virtual machine, the VMDK converter. So if you are using that other virtualization platform that has the disks in a VMDK format, you can use System Center to go and convert those dynamically. It'll take those, push them up into Azure, convert them over to the format used in Azure, and you can run those machines very simply. Continuing on, so we've had great support, great solutions for Windows Server. We'd like to announce that we are now have general availability of a full supported solution for Linux through the SUSE Linux Enterprise Server. So within Azure, we actually have several Linux versions, and SLES is the first one to have a full end-to-end support within Azure. So you can run it, you can get support from the Microsoft team for all of the Azure platform, and they will coordinate with the folks from SUSE to give full support of the Linux operating system and the components of that Linux distribution. Now, this is based on a gallery image, and I'll show you how you select the appropriate image to get the full support from SUSE. As I said, it's integrated with Azure support. In fact, the way that we start this is that you start with an Azure support contract. That covers the Azure platform. You do need an Azure support contract to initiate support, because we want to look at things, see if the platform, is there anything going on with the platform and the way it's interacting with the hardware. And after the Azure team, the Microsoft support team, has gathered the basic debugging information, then they work with the folks at SUSE to get additional support. And just like anything else in the cloud, that's charged at a per minute price, so you only pay for what you use when you're using it. So let me flip back over and show you how this looks. Close this down. So again, coming into the gallery, if we come in here and look at SUSE, now there, previously before today, there would have been just two versions. Now there's a new one. So there's a community-based version that has support through the community. That's the way that's always been. There's the option to run the version that is patch only, but there's no support included. This is what we've had since we've launched Windows Azure IaaS. The new one here is the one that's listed as the premium image. This is the one that gives you the information the support, how you get support, the Azure support plan is required. And you also have a little bit more information. Click here and get more details on the pricing of that, how that operates. And so now, if you're running whether Windows or Linux, you can get a full end-to-end enterprise-class support solution through Azure. All right.
Back over?
Yep.
Let me grab this. All right, thanks, Drew. So one additional announcement that we would like to make as part of this section is the compute-intensive VM sizes. And it was mentioned this morning by Brad. They're very eloquently named A8 and A9. I'm sure you can guess what kind of capability they have with those names. So the key thing here, there's two big aspects. One, with the A9, we now have a machine that offers 16 virtual cores and 112 gig RAM. Those cores are faster than the existing sizes that we've got, and so you will see a noticeable uptick in performance on those cores themselves. Obviously, the more memory. And the other big aspect of this, and these are the same sizes that we've offered as part of cloud services, but now you have them for both Windows and Linux. The other big aspect is we do have, as part of these, the 40 gigabit RDMA NIC, and the drivers that we have today are for Windows only, unfortunately. But the NIC is there, and it does enable that incredibly fast transfer rates between virtual machines running in the cloud. It's great for HPC-type workloads, MPI-type solutions, where you've got a lot of parallel processing, or actually not parallel processing, excuse me, that needs to happen. Parallel processing doesn't need this. So anyway, and so the faster speeds and so on, we've seen a lot of improvement in performance for folks using these sizes. So these are available. One caveat that's worth pointing out, today they are only available to be set using PowerShell. The portal does not yet list these sizes, so you'll have to actually wait for a few more weeks, and the portal will list these sizes in their next update. But PowerShell, you can go ahead and list them starting right now. And so the main reason for this is actually one of the big changes that we've had, and this is kind of an important point. Up until now, we have a very big focus on our scale units in Azure. And so within a given region, we end up having a bunch of scale units. It's more than 8 machines, typically. No, it's roughly around 1,000, which is one of our scale units. And this is the way we roll out updates, and this is the way we sort of maintain the system, right? But we do it slowly in a given region, and it allows us to sort of coordinate across all the different machines running in a given region, like in West US, for example. And up until now, our virtual networks that we offered were always bound by that same scale unit, right? And so as you deployed a virtual network, it also had that scale unit as its boundary, and that's also how the virtual network was managed by that scale unit. Well, as we brought these new sizes on, this has become a complex a problem for you guys and for us, in that virtual network now can't be limited to just the scale unit, because we have the new machines, the purple ones, which are the A and A9, that need this additional hardware. And so what we've also changed, and you'll see this actually slowly trickle through the platform, is now the virtual network spans an entire region. So the virtual network is now region-wide. It means it's not going to be bound by any of the scale units of a given 1,000-machine boundary. It also means that you'll be able to put different type sizes together in the same virtual network and have them talk to each other. The key thing here, any new virtual network that you create through PowerShell will be created this way, specifically if you pass location. The affinity group of old is the way that you got tied to the scale unit. Location is now region, and that is the future. We will, over time, migrate existing virtual networks to this new model, and so that's going to be over the next few months as we sort of continue to build it out and grow it out. So existing virtual networks will move, but currently you can go create one fresh and be able to deploy these 8 and A9s with A1s and basic A2s and so on and so forth, all in the same network. And so it's a fairly sizable change for us, and it is coming out actually today. So this was the coming out party for this change. So, excellent. Okay, do you want to actually
so
show?
Now, Corey, you'd mentioned the wide virtual network, how it's spanning a region, but is it in the portal?
What's that? No. Yeah, that's right. So that's the wide virtual network and these new sizes are not yet in the portal. They will be imminent in the portal.
So what we wanted to, so if you wanted to use these new machines, first off, here's a quick shot of a machine. So our A8 and A9, as Corey mentioned, let's just go ahead and bring up the A9. So this is now the largest machine that we have for infrastructure service. It's sitting there with 16 cores, 112 gig of RAM. The machine has a RDMA-capable network interface card. So if you have multiple A9 or a combination of A8 and A9s, you can use that low-latency network, RDMA-capable network, for a message-passing type of HPC application.
Yep.
You can also use those for IaaS applications. So if you just need a larger machine, you want to run SQL Server on that, that's certainly possible. Or MySQL, these machines support Linux as well. However, if you're doing that, you probably want to use, if you're running it for SQL Server, you probably don't want your front-end machines or your applications necessarily running on that large machine. And due to the way that those single-scale units were, you couldn't kind of mix those together in the virtual network.
Actually, go back to the task manager real fast.
Yeah.
So you can also see here the laser pointer. You can see here at the top the CPU as well that we have exposed on these machines. So you can go in and take a look at that CPU, the Intel Xeon.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. All right, so if you want to use these today, you want to get right on using these machines or just spanning your virtualized networks, I want to walk through just how to do this as a quick way. So in the networks here, as I said, the portal today is going to create these as a what we call a narrow VNet or a network that's scoped to a single scale unit. But I can go in here and create one, and we're going to just create one in West US. VNet. Specify a VNet into an affinity group. And we'll go ahead and just let this kick off using the default configuration. This would give you the default, the existing kind of virtual networks that we have today. Now, to leverage the wide VNet, to show you how simple this is, we're going to let this start this creation. You have the capability to download the full configuration file here through the export functionality. So I'm going to export the virtual network for my entire subscription. Click this here. We're going to save this. So if we replace this, now we're going to go look at that virtual network. This is the schema for the virtual network, and if you look at the West US one we just created is marked into an affinity group, this West US affinity group. If we want to change that, we're just going to do this and let me open this up in Notepad. All we need to do is come down here to that West US. Instead of an affinity group, we're just going to say we're going to give it a location because we want to cover the whole of the West US location. Specify West US here. Save this, and now if we go to PowerShell, now we're going to set the Azure, grab the script here. So to set the virtual network, I didn't rename it, so we're just going to go back to VNet config. This is going to update the configuration in Azure as a wide VNet now, such that we could come in here and deploy multiple machines of different sizes into the wide VNet. Now you're able to mix and match the SQL Server along with the existing VM sizes. All right.
Back
to you, Corey.
All right. Okay, so for security and ecosystem, we actually have a lot of focus on this in some later sessions throughout the week, so we won't go into too many demos, but just to kind of walk you through some of the options we've got. You know, this isn't new, but obviously the ability to lock down access control to your network, so you can control down the ACLs either through PowerShell or through being able to specify it directly in the portal. You can now access, lock down the controls, and be able to limit who can access it, both whitelist and blacklist, using this type of technology. You can actually deploy BitLocker, and we will have a white paper that goes live here in the next couple months that explains how to do this in great detail. You can leverage BitLocker to directly encrypt some of the drives on your VMs running in Azure and not have to use a chip on the box, and so it allows you to do that and deploy that way. Obviously, SQL data encryption is one additional recommendation for being able to encrypt your data if you're deploying with SQL, and especially perhaps if you're using an always-on solution, using the capabilities that we'll mention later, the ability to use sort of the TDE encryption, is a very powerful way to sort of lock down at the application layer. One solution that you'll see a lot of coverage on in this later session, later in the week, is Trend Micro Secure Cloud. This is a solution that we are announcing jointly to be able to be working on Azure. And so it allows you to encrypt disks on Azure with keys stored off in the Trend Micro repository. And so it allows sort of this multi-vendor solution where you sort of got one key with one guy and your data encrypted with another guy, and it kind of puts it together at runtime with the two companies working together to sort of build that. So this is something that, again, they'll be talking quite a bit about in this other session later in the week. And then AF4 will also be there, a similar type of solution to be able to encrypt your disks. And so across all of these, being able to get access control and disk encryption and data encryption of your application, we feel like we've got a wide range of security solutions for customers. And, of course, operation audit throughout the portal. You're able to audit all access control using Azure Active Directory. Anyone tries to delete or access things, you are able to see it. You are able to monitor it and pull that up through the portal. Okay. And similar to what we announced, and similar using the same extension model that we talked about earlier, we do have three security extensions that we'll be able to install directly into the virtual machine, focusing on sort of endpoint security, server endpoint security, Microsoft Anti-Malware, which is in preview, Symantec Endpoint Protection, and Trend Micro Deep Security solutions, all three available with checkboxes directly in the portal, similar to what Drew showed you with the Chef and Puppet experience. You just check these, the agent goes into the box, and it's configured then according to the solution that's offered by each one of those products. And so you can end up using it and connecting to your on-premise server management solutions the way you would today, or you can click the Microsoft Anti-Malware and just have it there by default on boot. And again, this will be covered and demoed in detail later this week. Great. Okay. And then the enterprise grade, final sort of slides here on enterprise grade, DR and networking. I'll hand it back over to Drew. I'll take this one. Just kidding. I'm taking this one. So this is the site recovery that was announced this morning. This is pretty exciting technology. There actually is a very deep focus session on this. But the key thing here, the big change here, is previously site recovery, or what was known as Hyper-V Recovery Manager, was very focused on having two of your own regions, with Azure being the witness, right? And so Azure ended up storing the repository and was sort of the witness that your site went down. The big change that we're announcing, again, using infrastructure as a service as that backend, site recovery now becomes the solution with Azure being the actual replication site. And so with one on-premise solution, you can now deploy, you can pay for the service in a very similar way to the way you used to do it, except Azure is now that replicated site, and you're able to sort of launch that, have that full recovery plan in place, and be able to deploy it accordingly. You can even test it ahead of time. And so there's a lot of great power there, again, using infrastructure as a service as sort of that underlying solution there. And of course, the virtual machines being just VHD backed, it was very easy for them to go build the solution and deploy using the VMM technology on premises. And so the whole key thing here, it's automated VM protection replication. It is remote health monitoring using Azure monitoring. And of course, the recovery plan can be customizable. So you can pick an order of how things need to come up, in what way, and in what rate, and be able to sort of choose between, you know, is your marketing site more important than your actual running application, and these sorts of decisions that you may want to make. Okay. Great. Right. Now I hand it.
All right. Thank you, Corey.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. So with enterprise grade in Azure, one of the big things that we hear on and on again is, you know, we need an enterprise grade network. When Azure came out, when our virtual machines came out, we had some basic networking. This is an area we've continued to improve upon. And here at TechEd, we've got a lot of great announcements. Some things going into general availability, some things brand new. There's additional sessions on all of this area, so we're going to give a high-level overview, but then you can go into some of these other sessions to get a much deeper knowledge in these things. So the first one is what we call virtual network to virtual network connectivity. So before today, if you wanted to link two virtual networks together, really the only way, and it was a pretty painful way to do it at that, is to route them into your corporate network, into an on-premise location, kind of run it as a hub and spoke model, which is a very painful way to actually get high availability within Azure, for an Azure system. With virtual network to virtual network connectivity, you just take your two virtual networks and you can link them together. Those virtual networks can be in the same subscription, they can be in different subscriptions, those can be in the same region or cross regions. So if you're running these, you can run it across region. We'll actually go through a little bit of demo of how you actually start leveraging SQL Server and its high availability across region between one Azure location, another Azure location, in a secure manner, protected manner between those two sites. So this gives you a lot more flexibility in what you can do with your virtualized networks. So as I mentioned here, this is a great example. So a common scenario is setting up SQL Server. You will have a primary and a secondary in one location. And in the second location, you'd have likely an asynchronous secondary. Again, it's using that cross-region secure channel for that connectivity. The next thing is that we've heard a lot is customers deploy their virtual machine. They have their IP address for their service, but they're afraid, what happens if I were to accidentally click delete, or if Azure were to delete the machine? I've already given that IP address out. It's actually used in security in different places. I want to make sure to maintain that. So the IP reservation allows you as a customer to go in, say, I want to reserve that IP address on that deployment. And then even if I delete the deployment, delete the VMs behind that, that IP address is maintained and it's your IP address to use. And then you can deploy another set of machines using that same IP address and with confidence, and you know with confidence that wasn't shared out to any other Azure customers. Now, the other piece is that, okay, maybe I don't want everything running through that load balancer. I don't want everything going through the port mapping. Especially for certain applications like an FTP server that is really a challenge to do. We've introduced instance-level IPs that effectively give you a connection to that machine. Now, I say effectively, it does still go through an edge device, but there's no port mapping. All of the ports from the internet come directly through to that to your virtual machine. You can still use your firewall as you want on that virtual machine to get additional security. But your machine is on the internet at that point in time, and so you can actually do a lot more applications, as I said, like FTP, that were not possible before. Next is the internal load balancing. So today, if you want to run a SharePoint site or just an IIS site, and you want to connect to it from on-prem into Azure, what you end up doing is coming through the internet to get the load balancing. Again, you can have ACLs on the internet-facing site, but your traffic was flowing over the internet. It's not fully secured within the VPN system. By moving to an internal load balancer, as compared to your external load balancer, now it's no longer directly on the internet. You can't get to those sites. You can't get to that from the internet. But from within the virtualized network, from on-premise or any other machine in that virtual network, you can connect directly to that and get load balanced. So let's dig into a set of these networking features.
And one thing you mentioned, Drew, that's worth pointing out, the virtual network being able to cross between two different subscriptions gives a lot of control and power to maybe some management options that you want to do. If you want different subscriptions to have different access for different people, you now have the ability to connect those with the virtual network. So they're still on the same network. They can still talk to each other. But now you have the management options between the two, quota options between the two, et cetera. So it actually opens up a lot of those different solutions by allowing that to cross different subscriptions in addition to different regions, which is more of an application focus as well.
Thanks,
so
Greg.
Go ahead. Sorry, yeah.
All right, so now I've switched over to another subscription, and in this subscription we've set up, under the networking, a set of virtual networks. So these are simulating the two regions. If we look at these virtual networks under the configuration, it's got a VPN connection, but these two VPN connections are connecting to each other. So you're utilizing effectively what we had before, but instead of connecting to an on-site location, we're just connecting to another Azure location. Now, what that enables us to do, we'll log into the SQL Server here. So we've set up through this three machines using SQL Server Always On, using SQL Server Enterprise. And as you see here, within one region, we've got a primary and a secondary running synchronously. Okay, we've got the primary and secondary running here, and then we've got an asynchronous machine running secondary in the alternate location, in the DR location. Now, when I have this set up like this, I can easily come in here and kick off the failover wizard. And at this point in time, I can either fail over to the local secondary with no data loss, or if that was down, I could actually select here, and it's going to give me the warning to fail over to the remote location, and there's potential data loss. We'll do the no data loss version, connect up to the machine, give the credentials to connect, and then kick this off. And this is going to initiate the failover of the virtual machines. Here we're doing it within the same site, but you could certainly do this to the remote site. That remote secondary can also be used for running reports against as a read-only secondary. So there's just a lot of flexibility that you have now by linking these virtual networks together. The next thing we're going to show, I want to flip back to the previous subscription. We want to look at the internal load balancing. So what I've got set up here is I have two machines set up for IIS. I've got IIS-1 and IIS-2. And if we look at these machines, what I want to point out is there's no external endpoint. So normally, if I wanted to do kind of load balancing with IIS or SharePoint, I would have needed to set up a load balanced endpoint that would have been on the internet. I would have needed to go through and do some ACLing, figure out what IP addresses I want to allow in. Now I don't need to worry about that, because instead, I've actually leveraged the internal load balancing capability. Now, similar to some of the other things that we've are announcing today, again, these are features that are fairly hot off the press. And so a lot of these are kind of coming in with PowerShell. You leverage them in PowerShell, we get the advanced early adopters using these, and then you'll see them come into the portal going forward. I also want to point out that as of right now, the internal load balancing, the reserved IP address, this functionality is only utilized when you have that wide network. The wide network spanning the entire regions brings on some more capabilities. Again, as we go forward, we'll have some more dynamic configuration and allow you to use these in different locations. But so what we have here is I've ran the script to create an internal load balancer. This creates an endpoint very similar to the internet-connected one, but it's just an internal load balancer. Then I set an endpoint. This endpoint configuration is exactly the same as I would be using for an external endpoint, and then I update the VM. So if we look here, let me just show you get the internal load balancer, config. We're going to see you've got the internal load balancer set up. I've got the IP address of the internal load balancer is 10.0.0.6. Sorry. And if we connect in, so I've got an IIS machine, I got a client machine or a server I'm using as client that I can connect into that location. And so here, if I connect onto...
And it's on the same network.
Yeah, exactly. This is on the same network. And I've got the machines. Here's the two IIS servers, IIS1 and IIS2 individually if we were connecting to them. But now I can hit this .6. And it's going to load balance between those two machines. And by leveraging this, I can use from within Azure, within any machine in that virtual network, or any machine in that on-premise that's connected up through a VPN device.
Right. Leveraging even ExpressRoute, you could do something like
exactly.
This.
Exactly. Yep. So you can do ExpressRoute. You could actually set up something like a SharePoint site running strictly in Azure, use ExpressRoute, and actually run that just as any other SharePoint solution on-premise. Okay, so let's go back to the slides.
All right.
So that's really covered, and again, there's a lot in that enterprise grade for IaaS. Now we want to dive into kind of the hybrid IaaS. We've mentioned this a little bit with ExpressRoute, so I just want to touch on this real quickly. ExpressRoute, so on the far left, you had the solutions we had before, the IPsec-based VPN solutions over the internet. That's still in place. ExpressRoute brings two kind of key ways to connect up with ExpressRoute. One is through a partner like Equinix, where you actually connect Azure and your on-premise servers in an Equinix location. That's the middle item there. There's a session specifically on that kind of configuration later this week, Wednesday.
Yep.
And then also, if going further than that, instead of going through a colo type of facility, you can use a telco and have a direct connection through your telco from your on-premise location directly to the Azure Edge. Then the last part that we're going to cover here is, again, continuing on the hybrid, is what we call multi-site-to-site VPN. So today, your Azure VPN connection could connect to one local site and one local site only, but you weren't able to connect, say, to multiple branch offices. Now, not only can you connect Azure VPNs to Azure Virtual Networks to Azure Virtual Networks, you can connect your Azure Virtual Network to multiple site locations, so you have that fully interconnected configuration as you want. The last piece on the hybrid that we're going to talk about today is really about using Azure in the same way you use on-premise. So on-premise, people will use standard file servers for a lot of operations, whether that's backing IIS, setting up clustering, setting your log shares. There's just a ton of things you can do with a standard file share. What we're announcing today is the ability to use Windows Azure Storage as a file share. It uses SMB 2.1 as the protocol. It uses the standard Windows Azure Storage, so you have the three copies of the data in the back end, and it allows you to do various operations, such as using your settings, diagnostic store, your applications that were running on-premise, just lifting, shifting, and bringing those to Azure. Your machines, the virtual machines, connect up to that directly, and we'll show you a quick demo on how those are put together. The key thing to note here, though, is that based on the SMB protocol, having worked on that for a long time, it's not really designed for the internet. It was designed some years ago. And so the security of the SMB protocol, we make sure that you only use it for machines within Azure. So your file share, your Azure files, has to be connected to from machines, whether that's IaaS or platform as a service machines, within that same data center. So you get that same kind of connectivity guarantees that customers use SMB on-premise. All right, so let me flip over one last time.
Yep.
All right, so what we've got here, so the Azure Files is available now in a preview. You can go and request to get into that preview capability. Again, there's a deeper session on Azure Storage. It's going to go into deeper information about files later today. But so here, if we look at storage, I created in the East region, my storage account, and blobs, tables, and queues is what we always had previously, and now you have files, which is very similar to the way it was before. So instead of blob, it's just file. But this now enables you to do standard SMB. In addition to SMB, you can also use REST access to those file shares. So here I've got, and the way that it works, let me actually show real quick. If we click on the storage account to manage the keys, You've got your account name and your primary key and secondary key. So I can grab either one of those. I'm going to now go back to my IIS. Actually, I want to go to the server. Let's do this. Close this. We'll go back to the IIS VMs. Let's connect up to this guy. This machine is running in the same data center, so we'll be able to connect to the shares using standard SMB. So here, actually got it already pre-prepared. So here, just using standard net use. So standard net use, the path is the file share plus the share that I'd created. The username is the name of the storage account, and then the password is one of the primary or secondary
key.
Access key. All right, and so now, let me do this back. Now I've got drive Y, and if we start this up, it's just like a standard file share. I've got Azure Files with IaaS rocks.
Okay. Very cool.
And that we could then connect to from another machine.
Very cool.
All right.
All right, thanks, Drew. Just to kind of wrap up, guys, you know, as we talked about at the beginning, we do think of the Azure Cloud as being unique and being able to offer hyperscale, enterprise grade, and hybrid. We tried to go through and show you a lot of the details and a lot of the new things. It's jam-packed because we have so much new stuff. But thank you for staying with us, and I hope you enjoyed the session. Please make sure you do go and actually judge us, grade us, put comments in. We'll make the content better. We'll make our presentation skill better. Hopefully you enjoyed the session. Hopefully you enjoy TechEd. And so I'll leave this up as you leave.